couple of hands. A solitary light. Say, move on, man, there's nothing more to see here. Hubcap lying by the edge of the street. Chalk mark in the shape of a sleeper. And I hear your voice from a distant hall. Is that the way love calls? And I fire like a sound through a dozen walls. Is that the way? Spanky and the gang, the Rat Pack too, Flash and all the freaks that he hangs with. His smile is slight to see me turn to you. After all this time, I'll let my little love languish. And I hear your voice from a distant hall. Is that the way love calls? I fire back sound through a dozen walls. Is that the way love calls? Steady it up. A tripod and a tent and an old triangle. You gotta empty the bottle, you wanna fill the cup. Till now my heart's been nothing but achieving a goddamn angle. And I hear your voice from a distant hall. Is that the way love calls? 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 Is that the way love calls?
That's Toronto-based singer-songwriter and guitarist Noah Zachron with The Way Love Calls from his recently released seventh recording, the fabulous genre-defying Strange Rider. It's an album that moves effortlessly between blues, jazz, folk, and R&B, and even throws some doo-wop into the mix. And it's a great record, and one that really rewards repeated listening. And Noah Zachron is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. How are you doing today, Noah?
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great. I'm so pleased to have you here. I've been very excited about this album, and I meant every word of what I said at the start. It's an album that has really, really grown on me. I wanted to start off with talking about the album itself and why this seems a little bit of a departure from some of your other records, which seem to be more folk singer-songwriter based. And yeah. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about why you decided you wanted to go into this direction.
Well, part of the reason I decided to do that was because I don't have very strict genre definitions of what I will listen to or what I don't want to listen to or what I want to try when I reject. I play electric guitar with other people, but I never really do that. I never get a chance to do it with my own music. And it was something that I wanted to experiment with. I love Douglas, who I worked with, Douglas September, and I just wanted to see what we could come up with. And I just felt, you know, I don't like making the same record twice. And I felt that there was a bunch of songs, some of which had been waiting for a long time to be recorded, and others which had been recorded in a solo version. And I thought that they could handle a bigger treatment. So there was a lot of experimentation, and it was sort of characterized our days in the studio as playing in the sandbox. I had a bunch of guitars I didn't use a lot, and some ideas, and just wanted to see, you know, how much the songs could morph into something different, something unpredictable. And we really, really never knew what was going to happen. And most of the songs' arrangements changed radically or completely by the time we'd finished with them. I just wanted to play.
Now, I think this is an album that you did take time to record. You mentioned that some of the songs you'd had for a while, and actually I was checking out a video online for one of the tracks, I think, Can't Wake Up, and that was a video from 2007, I think I was
listening
to. Yeah,
that's one of the relatively recent ones.
Yeah, and that it seemed like you took like 3 or 4 years at least to bring this together. Do you think that really helped get a good understanding of what you wanted? You mentioned the fact that the arrangements, you know, in some cases changed radically over the years.
Yeah. Well, we had no choice. I mean, part of it is that, you know, I was working at the time and had limited time to go into the studio, and Douglas has a property out east that he goes to when he can for extended periods of time. So we weren't really able to record at a feverish pace. We'd have to do something and then wait a week, and so that naturally took time. And then the other part was that when I started, we did the basic tracks. I played my guitar, the acoustic guitar, as I ordinarily do when I play solo. And in listening back, we increasingly realized that the arrangements on the acoustic guitar were not the appropriate ones for the songs. I arranged my songs for solo performance, so I cover a lot of the territory that other instruments would do if they weren't there. And so on the record, they're there. We had to cut them back, and play around and see what would fit.
This album has this really wonderful, you described in the notes I was given, as a sort of widescreen sonic canvas, and it really does feel like that, you know, that the instruments, you know, move in and out of the scene almost, and it comes together wonderfully. Is a lot of that the influence from working with Douglas? I mean, or did you go in there and say, look, you know, I really want to do something different this time?
Well, he knew what I wanted to do. I mean, he knew that I wanted to make a bigger record with a lot of electric guitar. I've worked in other studios, and the previous record, Waiting on Your Love, did a lot of work in the studio with David Travers Smith, mostly mixing it, and with Jeremy recording and doing some of the mixing. I marvel at the technology that's available to us now. I'm not that old, but I did start in an era where I made my first record was an LP, and it was recorded on a one-inch tape. And the guy who was working with me, the engineer, had in his arsenal of tricks a razor blade. And so, like, it wasn't non-destructive splices that you can get on any $60 program or free program, you know, whatever it is, like GarageBand. You know, having the freedom to mix and move pieces of music around and vary relative volumes so easily and so sensitively made it a very big part of the experimental process and part of the joy in making the record.
And you brought a great group of people together. I was just looking at the names of the people on this album. I mean, you know, from the Toronto end of things, you've got Chris Gardner, pops out immediately. Dennis Kelly, and I just love Dennis's organ on whatever he plays on.
He's a great player. He played on a bunch of tracks on this record, and again, on Waiting on Your Love. He came into the studio. This time he recorded it at home and sent us the tracks. Chris was someone I used to play with quite a lot.
And then you have Ralph Carney and Ken Pearson on there as well.
Well, Ralph again, I got in touch with him last record, and he contributed some tracks. He lives out west. He was in San Francisco at the time. He's in Portland, Oregon now. And he sent us tracks for two of the songs in Waiting on Your Love. And on this record, there were, I think he's on two or three songs. And in some cases, I said, I need a big band arrangement. And he plays, I mean, you know, he's a multi-instrumentalist, and he sent us big arrangements. And one of the hallmarks of Ralph's work is that he doesn't send alternate takes. He'll send what he sends. the first time he did that, I was kind of taken aback because I'm used to having six or seven takes to choose from. But it makes it easier, you know, and he did his work. And in some cases, on this record, the nature of the arrangements that he gave us ideas about how to shorten the song and just make it a bit tighter. So it was really helpful. And Kenny is really the first wonderful musician I ever played with in my life. When I was living in Montreal, I used to sit in occasionally with a woman named Daphne Linmar, and playing electric guitar with her. And she had a weekly gig at some club on Crescent or Bishop in Montreal, and Kenny was playing with her. And I'd never encountered a musician with such exquisite taste and restraint and musicality. And I got in touch with him, and he was sort of reluctant to come in at first because he said, well, there's all kinds of great players in Toronto. You don't need me. I was a bit shocked by his humility. And I spoke to him, and then I asked Douglas to please speak with him and get him out, because he really felt like, you know, we have a lot of great players in town. But I wanted him, and Douglas expressed that to him. And he came in, he was out in Woodstock, Ontario, and he came in and he did a day. I wasn't able to be there for most of the session, but I came for the end of it, and it was really wonderful to see him again. And, of course, his contributions are beautiful. There's outtakes that we had to leave off, but there's one, just him playing solo piano sort of underneath what would be A Woman's Tears, and we didn't use it. But it just gave this real gospel-y thing, and it was just solo piano. He's a beautiful, beautiful player, and I'm so happy that he's on the record.
Well, A Woman's Tears is a track we'll be playing in a few moments. But before we get there, I want to talk about the first track we played, which actually is the last track on the album. That's The Way Love Calls. I do want to let our listeners know that I wanted to pick songs that I hadn't played from this album, because I've already played three songs already. That was Find My Baby, Don't Walk Away, and the track Night and There's Nothing Whole. It's a great album. I absolutely love it. But let's talk about The Way Love Calls. Tell us about that song.
It's a love song. And, you know, I just imagined hearing the voice of somebody coming to me from probably like a mile away, and how things go through walls and dreams. People come to you in dreams, and sometimes you whisper their name, and that conjures them up, and you hope that they hear it. And things either work out or they don't work out.
Now, you're a poet as well as a singer-songwriter. How does that influence your lyrics?
I have a great reverence for language. I like to use precise words for the meanings that I'm looking for. I read a lot, so hopefully I have a vocabulary that reflects that love of the language. And, you know, when I apply it to both the poetry and to the songwriting, and it's really a matter of using the language to its fullest capabilities and not being lazy about choosing the first word that comes to mind if it's not the exact words that's required. Just a sense of the cadences and the rhythms and of rhyming both the obvious end rhymes and also absence, internal rhymes, and all kinds of devices that are used to create a tapestry of sound, basically.
Well, certainly that was one of the things I noticed when I first picked up this album. That was quite clear. There was obviously a lot of thought that went into the lyrics of these songs.
Yeah, I love the English language. I love languages, but and I speak whatever I can in other languages. I'll use phrases from other languages, but I'm a great admirer of the English language. It's a beautiful, rich vocabulary, rich language.
Well, you know, one of the things I liked was the fact that I could open the album cover on the CD and read the lyrics really, really easily while enjoying the songs on the album. So that would be definitely another plus from my point of view.
Yeah, we worked on that. I was adamant about it. It was a bit of a job to get them all to fit and to make sure that they were legible. But, you know, I wear readers, and right now I'm at 2.5. I can get away with 2.25 sometimes, but... But I'm aware of the plight of the myopic.
Well, it's definitely wonderfully laid out, and I wanted to thank you for that.
So
we're going to head back to the music just now and play A Woman's Tears, but I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that song. It's a wonderful R&B song with a little bit of a mid-tempo gospel feel to it. Tell us a little bit about that one.
It's one of the old songs. It's a song that I wrote. I moved to Toronto in 1987, and it's probably one of the first songs that I wrote after moving here, probably around the 89, well, it wouldn't have been one of the first, but it's around 89, 90, I wrote it, and I performed it back in those days. I used to work occasionally with a trio, and when I just went to solo, it just never seemed to fit in my repertoire and in the set list, because it required more underneath it for it to be interesting to me to play. And I just dropped it. And but I have, there's a guy in Toronto who was one of my first appreciators, and I know that he loved that song, and I hope that he ends up hearing it. But it was a song that just hung around, and I really liked it. I just had no place to put it and never really had an opportunity to record it, and it was tailor-made for this record. And the vocalist that came in and you know, the piano and the organ behind it, just I appreciate that you say gospel, because I got that feel from it. And when I heard the playbacks after Gail and Betty did their vocals, I was just blown away by how it had opened up.
Yeah, it really has. That's Gail Berry and Betty Richardson that are on the vocals on this song. Let's play that just now. This is Noah Zachron from his wonderful new album, Strange Rider, and A Woman's Tears. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
I seen all colors of the eyes dissolve when love went wrong. When I knew this pair of arms was not where I belong. It was life for a lie, truth for truth, sunshine down when love's in its youth. Dance for a dance, kiss for a kiss. Goodbye, darling, you will be missed. You will be missed. A woman's tears are not like lightning. They slowly fall to fill the sky. A woman's tears are not like thunder. When it all comes down, break so quiet, break so quiet. But her face is smooth as bare with a line. She rides is always the same line. It's always the same line. It's a single branch of ocean, a single run of rain. She'll grow old so beautifully. I won't see the change. Won't see the change in me. I won't be around. We'll play lost and found forever to the night. Comes down, and it comes down. A woman's tears are not like lightning. They slowly fall to fill the sky. A woman's tears are not like thunder. When it all comes down, it breaks so quiet. So like this, such sorrow after such a sweet, 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 sweet kiss. We thought about the corner of the room where the time bomb thinking 40 days, 40 nights, thinking 40 winters by firelight. 6 days of rust, one of wanderlust, and empires crumbled into the dust. Into the dust, a woman's tears are not like lightning, they slowly fall to fill the sky. So quiet when it all comes down. You know they break so quiet.
That's Noah Zachron with A Woman's Tears from his great new album, Strange Rider. He's our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're chatting about the album and some of the wonderful songs on it. But I want to go back, Noah, because this is the seventh album.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back through your discography, it seems that you produce an album every, maybe, what, 5, 6, 7, or 8 years? It's not like they're immediately coming out. And I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your development as a musician over the years.
Those are probably two separate discussions. I have no excuse for not putting out more records, come clean. I have the material. I just sometimes get distracted or lazy or discouraged. I do actually have another record ready to go, and we'll probably release it in the fall. And I have songs ready to start recording for another record and all kinds of instrumental ideas. My development as a music is a much happier story. I started playing music when I was a kid, piano lessons and viola in elementary school, clarinet in high school. I asked for my first guitar when I was 9 years old, and I've been playing guitar since then. My early influences were all folk and blues artists. Mississippi John Hurt was one of my first huge influences. I loved him. And then there was a record lending library in Montreal, and I used to go there and take out LPs. And I discovered Bill Brunzi and Josh White and Reverend Gary Davis and Dave Van Ronk, and Mike Seeger was one of the people I loved so much. But as I got older, I just listened to more music, and I really never paid attention to genres. And I have difficulty with people who want to do that. You know, I understand in terms of marketing, it's important to say something, but as an appreciator of music, and also for someone who makes music, it seems like it would be counterintuitive to cut yourself off from potential sources of influence and just beautiful things to listen to. So I listened to folk, blues, country, ragtime, bluegrass. Started listening to jazz. Started listening to pop music. That was the last one for me. Was pop music. I always had a bit of an attitude towards pop music, and I guess it allowed me to develop something with a little less populist influence. But I think I would have benefited from knowing more about pop music. I only started listening to the Beatles and that stuff when I was in my 20s because I was sitting in with people. I needed to have a bigger repertoire. I love music, and you know, I listen to classical music at home. I rarely listen to music casually. So I never listen to my own records after they're done. I rarely listen to other singer-songwriters. I just don't want that closeness of influence. There are a few people that I do listen to. John Martin is a songwriter that I'll never stop listening to. He was one of my big favorites when I was in my mid-teens, and I still enjoy listening to him and seeing videos of him. Richard Thompson is someone that I'll listen to, but because he's a songwriter and also a guitar player, so I'll get ideas instrumentally. But I rarely listen to music at home other than classical music. I listen to ambient music. I have about 6 records on the CD player next to my desk, and one of them is Miles Davis' Kind of Blue that I'll always listen to. I have ambient music songs, Sounds of the Surf, Pacific Ocean. I have bird songs, and Brian Eno, Music for Airports. I can write with those on. That's it.
Yeah, I find it fascinating when people say, well, I don't listen to my albums again after I produce them. You mentioned, though, that you have another album ready to go. Is that going to be a similar to Strange Rider, or is that more of a singer-songwriter album?
It's going to be, it's actually, it represents, it's At another period of my life, I was a bit more diligent in starting and completing songs and archiving them. I had a working studio in my own place. I'm trying to recover from the computer revolution. I was working on multi-track digital tape in those days. And so I have about 30 songs that I wrote and recorded at home, most of which have never been heard. Some of them entered my repertoire, but a lot of them I wrote them, I performed them once to solidify them, and brought them home, recorded them, filed them away, and never played them again. So I worked with my friend Taras Petrick and got those songs off those tapes. And he helped me mix and master them, and I think they sound good, and I'm really pleased with some of the performances. They're songs that I really love. Many of them are, and they're just songs that I, for one reason or another, would not play in would not have in my current repertoire. I may have, I may bring some back once the record's out, but I'll be just happy that they're out there.
And that will be released in the fall, probably?
Probably in the fall, late fall. It's ready. I wanted to give Strange Rider a chance to, to gallop as far as she could and then set the other record out.
Can we talk about the live experience? I know you play live as a singer-songwriter.
I'm mostly solo, yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to have a band, a trio, break out the electric guitars and play, but to be quite frank, it's just too much work. But besides that, I really do love playing solo. I love deciding on what the set list will be when I arrive. I like changing the arrangements, and I don't really want to have to worry about someone having to follow me. My performances really respond a great deal to what's going on around me. I try never to play the songs the same way twice, and my set lists are not standardized. I just do it depending on who's out there. So I have a great time. I got a very fine compliment from a young guitar player once. He said something to the effect that you never know what's going to happen. It feels like you're on the edge. And I really try to be on the edge. I take chances all the time, and particularly with my guitar, but increasingly with my voice. And for me, that keeps it fresh and exciting and means that I'm not, I don't want to repeat myself. I mean, I always want to be learning something, and I always want to take chances and take people on that strange ride with me, I guess.
Is there any prospect of Strange Rider being performed in a band setting? I'm thinking about some of the great players that played on this.
Yeah, I would never be able to assemble everybody together, but I think that I can probably get it together to do some type of at the very least, play the record with a trio, probably do a four-piece, get a bass drum, certainly get Dennis Keldy to come out with his organ. B3, and I think that would probably be realistic. I have no difficulty having other people on stage. I've had horn players. Ralph was a little far away to ask him to come out, but anything's a possibility. So I'm thinking about sometime in the fall doing an official release. I may also, at that time, I may press to vinyl. I've had it mastered for vinyl. I think it's a record that would live well in that format.
I think you're absolutely right. It's certainly a fabulous, fabulous album, and I encourage as many people out there to take a listen. If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
I have a website. It's noahsong.com, noahsong.com. There's links to CD Baby, where other records have been sold. They're mostly out of stock now, and you can still get downloads. Strange Rider is available for download from CD Baby and also at iTunes and other web-based digital outlets.
And people can get information on all your gigs from the website as well.
Yeah, I keep that updated. I spend a fair amount of the summer up north in the Bancroft area, and I'm going to be doing most of my playing up there, but I do come into town. I'll be in town. I have two regular gigs in Toronto, one on the fourth Wednesday of the month with my friend Peter Boyd at Dammit Ray, and once on the first Thursday of every month with my dear, dear friend Jeff Barnes at the local guest. And their cover tunes and originals, always a wide range of styles, and we just have a good time, both of us. And other things come up, it's always current on the site.
Well, look, it's been great to talk to you today. We're going to finish with another track from the album. Rather appropriately, it's going to be Miss Me When I'm Gone. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that song?
The genesis of that song was actually a line that that a very dear ex-girlfriend, but still very good friend of mine, related to me. Her mother used to say that to her father. She said, "You'll miss me when I'm gone." It was always said lightheartedly, but of course, you know, we all understand about the way things can change and the fragility of life in general and human life. So that line resonated for me, and then when she left, I felt I understood the line a little bit more profoundly. I wrote this song, and I'm happy to say that my cat is on the song.
That's great. Noah, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Noah Zakharin, his great new album, Strange Rider, will leave you with Miss Me When I'm Gone. I'm Jan Hall, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio.
For myself, the ride is so much easier when you sit behind someone else. I miss the girl, I feel the ache, and I don't mind a few cliches. Who can look to a distant peak when the dust blows in your face? Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. Sunrise, sunset, wax and wane, the turning little world. It all moves so smoothly till I'm reminded of that girl. I look over my shoulder, I might see she does the same. We both heed that wise old light, time heals the wounds away. Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. Cease to favor me, there'll be no thaw come spring. Icy hands upon my heart, she's taken everything. Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone.
miss me when I'm